If Harry Mellow had been attractive before, Elizabeth's unreasonable tenacity had made him irresistible now, and instinctively Vicky tightened her grip around his waist. At the same time, she saw the wooded coppies that marked Carmi Mission Station looming ahead above the low, scrubby bush, and she felt a sinking dread. Soon Harry would be confronted with Elizabeth's honey-brown eyes and that soft, dark flood of hair pierced with russet stars of light. This was the only time in her entire life that Vicky could remember being free from surveillance, without her mother or Juba, or particularly her twin, being within earshot or touching distance. It was an exhilarating sensation, added to all the unfamiliar and clamorous sensations which assailed her, and the last restraints of her strict religious upbringing were swept away in the sudden reckless rebellious mood. She realized, with an unerring woman's instinct, that she could have what she so dearly wanted, but only if she took direct, bold action and took it immediately. It is a sad and bitter thing that a woman should be alone when she loves somebody so. Her voice had sunk to a low purr, and it affected Harry so that he brought the horse down to a walk. God did not mean a woman to be alone, she murmured, and saw the blood come up under the soft skin behind his ears. Nor a man either, she went on, and slowly he turned his head and looked into her green eyes. It's so hot in the sun, Vicky whispered, holding his gaze. I should like to rest for a few minutes in the shade. He lifted her down from the saddle, and she stood close to him still, without averting her eyes from his face. The wagon dust has covered everything and left us no clean place to sit, she said. Perhaps we should try further from the road. And she took his hand and quite naturally led him through the soft, pale, knee-high grass towards one of the mimosa trees. Beneath its spreading, feathery branches, they would be out of sight of any chance traveller upon the road. Mungo St. John's mare was lathered in dark streaks down her shoulders, and his riding boots were splattered with blown froth from her gaping jaws as he drove her over the top of the neck between the coppies and without pause pushed her down towards the white mission buildings. The mare's hoof-beats rang against the hills and echoed from the mission walls, and Elizabeth's slim-skirted figure appeared on the wide veranda of the homestead. She shaded her eyes to peer up the slope at Mungo, and when she recognised him, hurried down the steps into the sunlight. "General St. John, oh, thank God you've come!" she ran to take the mare's head. "How is she?" There was a wild, driven look upon Mungo's bony features. He kicked his feet from the stirrups and jumped down to seize Elizabeth by the shoulders and shake her in his anxiety. "It started as a game. Vicky and I wanted you to come to Mama because she needs you. She wasn't bad, just a little go of fever." "Damn you, girl!" Mungo shouted at her. "What has happened?" At his tone, the tears that Elizabeth had been holding back broke with a sob and streamed down her cheeks. "She's changed. It must be the girl's blood. She's burning up with the girl's blood." "Pull yourself together," Mungo shook her again. "Come on, Lizzie. This isn't like you." Elizabeth gulped once, and then her voice steadied. She injected blood from a fever patient into herself. "From a black girl? In God's name, why?" Mungo demanded, but did not wait for her reply. He left Elizabeth and ran up onto the veranda and burst in through the door to Robin's bedroom. But he stopped before he reached the bed. In the small closed room, the stink of fever was as rank as that of a sty, and the heat from the body in the narrow cot had condensed on the glass of the single window like steam from a kettle of boiling water. Crouched beside the cot like a puppy at its master's feet was Mungo's son. Robert looked up at his father with huge, solemn eyes, and his mouth twisted in the thin, pale face. "Son!" Mungo took another step towards the cot. But the child leapt to his feet, and silently he darted for the door, ducking nimbly under Mungo's outstretched hand, and his bare feet slapped on the veranda as he raced away. For a moment, Mungo yearned after him, and then he shook his head, and instead he went to the cot. He stood over it and looked down at the still figure upon it. Robin had wasted until the bones of her skull seemed to rise through the pale flesh of her cheeks and forehead. Her eyes were closed and sunk into deep leaden-purple sockets. Her hair, laced with silver at the temples, seemed dry and brittle as the winter grasses over the parched veldt. And as he leaned to touch her forehead, a paroxysm of shivering took her that rattled the iron bedstead, and her teeth chattered so violently that it seemed they must shatter like porcelain. Under Mungo's fingers her skin was almost painfully hot to the touch, and he looked up sharply at Elizabeth, who stood beside him with a stricken expression. "Quinine?" he demanded. "I have given her more than I should. 100 grains since this morning, but there is no response." Elizabeth broke off, reluctant to tell him the worst. "Yes? What is it?" "Before this, Mama had not taken quinine for 6 weeks. She wanted to give the fever a chance to strike and to prove her theory." Mungo stared at her aghast. "But her own studies?" He shook his head in disbelief. "She has shown herself that abstinence followed by massive doses." He could not go on, as though the words might conjure up the spectre he feared most. Elizabeth had anticipated his fears. "Her pallor," she whispered. "The total lack of response to the quinine. I'm so afraid." Instinctively, Mungo put his arm around Elizabeth's shoulders, and for a few seconds she shrank against him. Mungo had always enjoyed a special relationship with the twins. They had always been his willing accomplices and secret allies at Carmi Mission, from the first day that he had arrived, dying of the suppurating gunshot wound in his leg. Though they had been barely pubescent at that time, the twins had not been proof against the strange mesmeric effect he had on women of all ages. "Vicky and I tempted fate by telling you that Mama was dying." "That's enough," he shook her gently. "Has she passed water?" And then roughly, to cover the embarrassment between them, "Has she urinated?" "Not since last night." Elizabeth shook her head miserably, and he pushed her towards the door. "We must force her to take liquid. There is a bottle of cognac in my saddlebag. Get lemons from the garden, a bowl of sugar, and a big jug of boiling water." Mungo held Robin's head, while Elizabeth forced small sips of the steaming liquid between her white lips, and Robin fought them in her delirium, hounded and driven by the terrible phantoms of malarial fever. Then, as they worked, the icy chills that had racked Robin's body gave way abruptly to a baking heat that desiccated her, and though she did not recognize either Mungo or Elizabeth, she drank thirstily from their hands, gulping and choking in her eagerness, even though she was so weak that when she tried to lift her head, it lolled and rolled to one side, so that Mungo had to steady her. His hands, powerful and brutal-looking, were strangely tender and gentle as he cupped her chin and wiped away the drops that dribbled from her lips. "How much has she taken?" he asked. "Over 4 pints," Elizabeth answered, checking the level in the jug. The light in the room altered as evening began to fall, and Elizabeth stood up and held her back as she went to the door and looked across the veranda at the road that led down from the neck. "Vicky and Juba should have been home before now," she said. But her mother cried out again, and she closed the door and hurried back to the cot. Suddenly, as she knelt beside Mungo, she became aware of the sharp, ammoniacal odour that pervaded the room. She averted her eyes and said softly, "I must change her." But Mungo did not rise. "She is my wife," he said. "Neither Vicky nor Juba are here, and you will need help." Elizabeth nodded and drew down the bedclothes, and then whispered huskily, "Oh, sweet God!" "It is what we feared," Mungo said quietly, hopelessly. The skirts of Robin's nightdress were rucked up high around her pale, girlish thighs. They were sodden, as was the thin mattress beneath her, but it was not the sulphur-yellow urine stain that they had hoped to see. Staring bleakly at the soiled bedclothes, Mungo recalled the piece of calloused doggerel that he had heard the troopers of Jamison's column sing. "Black as the angel, black as the ace, when the fever waters flow, they are as black as disgrace. Soon we'll lay him down below and chuck dirt in his face. The reeking stain was black. Black as old congealing blood. The drainage from kidneys that were trying to purge the bloodstream of the wildfire anemia that was coursing through Robin's body. The destruction of the red corpuscles that was the cause of the dreadful pallor. For the malaria had been transmuted to something infinitely more evil and deadly. As they both stared helplessly at it, there was a commotion on the veranda and the door burst open. Victoria stood at the threshold. She was transformed, glowing from within, charged with that strange, fragile beauty of a young woman awakened for the first time to the wonder and mystery of love. "Where have you been, Vicky?" Elizabeth asked. Then she saw the tall young man in the doorway behind her twin. She realized what Harry Mellow's bemused yet proud expression meant. She felt no resentment, no envy, only a small, quick pleasure for Vicky. Elizabeth had never wanted Harry Mellow. She had teased her sister by pretending interest, but her own love was for a man she could never have. She had long ago resigned herself to that. She was happy for Vicky, but sad for herself, and Vicky misinterpreted her expression. "What is it?" The glow faded from Vicky's lovely face, and she lifted a hand to her bosom, as though to stem the panic that rose within her. "What's happened, Lizzie? What is it?"
"Blackwater," Elizabeth answered flatly. "Mother has blackwater fever."
She did not have to elaborate. The twins had lived their lives on a hospital station. They knew that the disease was peculiarly selective. It attacked only white persons, and Robin's researches had linked that peculiarity to the use of quinine, which was restricted almost entirely to the whites. Robin had treated 50 or more cases at the mission over the years. At first it had been the old ivory hunters and itinerant traders, then, more recently, the troopers of Jamison's Column and the new settlers and prospectors that were swarming across the Limpopo River. The twins knew that of those 50 cases of blackwater, only 3 had survived. The rest of them lay in the little cemetery beyond the river. Their mother was under virtual sentence of death, and Vicky flew to the bedside and knelt beside her.
"Oh, Mama," she whispered, stricken with guilt. "I should have been here."
Juba heated rounded river stones in the open fire and wrapped them in blankets. They packed them around Robin's body and then covered her with 4 carosses of wild fur. She fought weakly to throw off the covers, but Mungo held her down. Despite the internal heat of the fever and the external temperature of the hot stones trapped under the furs, her skin was burning dry and her eyes had the flat, blind glitter of water-worn rock crystal. Then, as the sun touched the treetops and the light in the room turned to somber orange, the fever broke and oozed from the pores of her marble-pale skin like the juice of crushed sugarcane from the press. The sweat came up in fat, shining beads across her forehead and chin, each drop joining with the others until they ran in thick, oily snakes back into her hair, soaking it as though she had been held under water. It ran into her eyes faster than Mungo could wipe it away. It poured down her neck and wetted and matted the fur of the kaross. It soaked through the thin mattress and pattered like rain on the hard, dry floor below. The temperature of her body plunged dramatically, and when the sweat had passed, Juba and the twins sponged her naked body. She had dehydrated and wasted, so that the rack of her ribs stood out starkly, and her pelvis formed a bony, hollowed basin. They handled her with exaggerated care, for any rough movement might rupture the delicate, damaged walls of the renal blood vessels and bring on the torrential hemorrhage which so often ended this disease. When they finished, they called Mungo back from where he was sitting with Harry Mellow on the stoop of the mission. Robin was comatose. Mungo set the lantern on the floor so that the feeble light would not trouble her. "I will call you if there is any change." He sent the woman away and sat on the stool beside the cot. Robin sank slowly during the night, as the disease destroyed her blood, and in the dawn light she looked as though she had been sucked by some monstrous vampire. He knew she was dying, and he took her hand, and she did not stir.